Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Well, when I buy chicken feed, I really look at the sack more than I do what's inside, because I know that I can do something fun with it.
That's egg farmer and artist Gretchen Marks. She shows us how she's using the feed sacks in her mixed media art. In anticipation of Easter next week, we talk to another egg farmer whose eggs are flying off the shelf at the winter market. And we make a salad using local eggs and some young veggies from the garden. Before all of that, we visit the community kitchen of Monroe County to find out what excites them most about this upcoming spring season. And one final recipe for liver and onions tacos. I bet you'll like it. Just wait. Mia Partlow is here to give us the lowdown on the food news headlines from the past couple weeks. Hey, Mia.
Hi, Annie. The people have spoken. They want their GMOs labeled. On Tuesday, the Just Label It campaign released results of a recent survey and petition drive. The survey showed that some 90% of Americans want labels for genetically modified foodstuffs. The petition, which asks the Food and Drug Administration to mandate GM labeling, gathered over 1 million signatures. This is in addition to a letter a group of 55 lawmakers sent to the FDA earlier this month urging them to do the same. This will no doubt come as bad news to many major food manufacturers. According to the Grocery Manufacturers Association, 80% of all packaged comestibles contain some amount of genetically modified material. And it seems as though the state of Connecticut doesn't want to wait for the FDA. Last week, the State Legislative Environment Committee approved a measure requiring labels on GMOs in a 23-6 vote. The State Department of Agriculture and Connecticut Farm Bureau are against labeling, arguing Connecticut will become less competitive from a commercial standpoint. Nearly 20 states are currently considering a labeling requirement. In addition to GMOs, the biggest newsmaker of the past couple weeks has been pink slime, an additive in ground beef that's made up of processed meat trimmings treated with food-grade ammonia hydroxide gas. Last week, The Daily reported that 7 million pounds of so-called pink slime were destined for school lunches, and that did not sit well with concerned citizens, federal officials, and industry spokespeople. As a result, the USDA now gives schools the option to serve lean, finely textured beef, the name for so-called pink slime. While the USDA and beef products executives still stand behind the meat safety, the yuck factor may prove insurmountable. Read more about these stories and many more on our website. Join the conversation while you're there. Do you want GMOs to be labeled? Is pink slime just fine as far as you're concerned? Let us know at eartheats.org.
Keep track of food news throughout the week by following us on Twitter and liking us on Facebook. Just search for Earth Eats. Mia Partlow reads our news headlines every week. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. See you next week.
By most estimates, only about 2-3% of Americans are vegetarians, but more than 40% of Americans age 18 to 29 choose to eat meatless at least once a week. That's the market the food industry is going for with new vegetarian products that mimic the flavor and the texture of meat. Harvest Public Media's Jeremy Bernfeld has the story.
Bob Scholler is a lot like most vegetarians, except for one big difference. Sometimes he eats meat.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, maybe a birthday, something like that thrown in. Just the special meal times of the year. Other than that, we don't go out of our way to eat meat.
Scholler is part of a growing new trend the food industry is looking to tap into. They're called flexitarians, health-conscious, mostly young consumers who are cutting back on meat in their diets. Scholler lives in Parkville, Missouri, outside Kansas City, legendary barbecue country and home of the North American World Series of Barbecue. We're talking serious meat. But Scholler cut meat mostly out of his diet because he was worried about his cholesterol.
You try not to eat salad every day. You look at what you can do with pasta and what you can do with certain casseroles, what you can do with beans and nuts and mixtures of things. And sometimes you're looking to make something taste a little bit like meat, a lot of times you're not.
Yeah, I would say that a lot of our customers tell us that they're looking for some alternatives and they're looking for new ways to think instead of the standard American diet that's, you know, very animal protein focused.
Sarah Morgan is a healthy eating specialist for the Whole Foods supermarket chain.
They say that there are a lot of ways and different foods out there that kind of allow them to eat in a way that, you know, it's, they still get maybe some of those comfort foods.
That's the new holy grail for some food companies. Vegetarian foods that replicate the carnivore's food experience so that they don't feel they're sacrificing while giving up meat. Vegetarian options like Boca Burgers and Tofurky recently started touting their flame-grilled taste and a new, juicier faux frankfurter. And even in the heart of the meat and potatoes Midwest, food scientists are all over the trend. You hear that? That's the sound of chicken being made, at least vegetarian fake chicken. I checked out the food science lab run by Harold Huff, a research scientist, and Dr. Fu-Hung She, a professor at the University of Missouri in Columbia. The team recently developed a soy-based vegetarian product meant to mimic the taste, texture, and look of real chicken. Taste isn't an issue. Food companies have had meat flavorings down for years.
The trick is the fineness of the fiber.
The fiber, researcher Huff says, is what makes the texture just right.
The mouthfeel and appearance in a food product sometimes is just as important as a taste. If it looks bad, people do not want to eat it. If you make it look like something they've already accepted, you've got a winner.
That's what Ethan Brown is betting on. He's the president and CEO of Maryland food production company Savage River Farms. His company is working with the University of Missouri and hopes to bring the veggie chicken product to market beginning next month. Flexitarians won't flock to rubbery meat forgeries.
I think that's probably why you're seeing people focus on replicating meat.
Humans have eaten meat for thousands of years, Brown says. There's no reason to throw that accumulated knowledge out, even if you're trying to be more of a vegetarian.
Why not create something from plants that mimics the taste, texture, and appearance of meat to allow us to continue to access all the terrific culture and recipes, etc., that we so come to enjoy?
Even with the product's launch imminent, Brown is having trouble settling on a name for the veggie strips. On the one hand, he wants it made clear they are fully vegan. On the other, he wants to attract meat eaters. For now, I'm splitting the difference and going with the oxymoronic veggie chicken. Standing in my kitchen, I'm about to satiate both my hunger and my curiosity. Some friends and I are going to throw the veggie chicken into some fajitas.
There we go. That's chicken pork. That's the veggie chicken pork.
The regular chicken fajitas we made were definitely better. But once you smothered the veggie strip in some sauce, it could probably pass for real chicken pretty well. That's what the food companies are going for, giving consumers another option. Bob Scholler, our flexitarian, says he's skeptical that any vegetarian product can truly mimic the taste, feel, and look of meat. But like any good Midwesterner, he wouldn't mind if they kept trying.
You know, barbecue, you just can't find a replacement for barbecue. You can put barbecue sauce on lots of things, but you haven't replaced the barbecue. So that's a tough one. If they can come up with a good barbecue sandwich, then I think that'll sell.
Half a slab of soy ribs? Maybe one day. Jeremy Bernfeld, Harvest Public Media.
Spring appears to be here to stay across South Central Indiana, and farmers and gardeners are looking ahead to their first young crops. Organizations dedicated to fighting hunger are also eagerly awaiting the harvest. Executive Director of the Community Kitchen of Monroe County, Vicki Pierce, explains that the kitchen's free meals include all sorts of seasonal fruits and vegetables given to them by the food bank, Plant a Row for the Hungry programs, and the farmers market.
So they're getting, you know, they may be getting carrots or celery, they may be getting apples, oranges, grapes, whatever. We want to get that fresh produce into the hands of low-income families who have a hard time accessing it.
She also credits home gardeners for dropping by to donate their excess harvest.
You may only have two peppers, but somebody else may have another six, and someone else may have 12. And that allows us to have enough peppers to do something with them. You know, people have this idea of what a soup kitchen serves and that it's very meager and, you know, really processed, whatever we can throw on a plate. It's absolutely not. Our food is prepared from scratch every day. Every meal has a main entree, a vegetarian option, a side vegetable, a green salad, and fruit every day.
This is the first spring for the Community Kitchen of Monroe County in its new location. The building is 5,400 square feet with additional storage upstairs. over 4 times bigger than their old place. In 2011, they served 224,000 meals that included many fresh and seasonal foods. Pierce says they're especially concerned with getting healthy food on the plates of children, who make up more than 61% of the kitchen's patrons.
You know, the cheapest, most affordable food is the worst food for you, by and large. And so being able to come here, we feel really good about what we're putting out for people to eat, because we know it really is food that's going to sustain someone and also give them some real nutritional value that they wouldn't be able to get even if they had an extra $25 in food stamps and could go buy more food.
Future projects for the kitchen include, hopefully, planting a small garden of their own. They're currently working with the Monroe County Soil and Water Conservation to amend the soil in the few small plots of green space on the property.
And that was the thing. They said, what do you want to grow? I said, onions, please, because that's what we have to buy the most of. And the price of onions has doubled in the last 3 years. And so we cook a lot with onions, and the staff like to use them in a lot of dishes, but that means we got to buy them.
Or, at least, she adds, they'd like to grow their own herbs in containers. Read more about the work done by the Community Kitchen of Monroe County on our website, eartheats.org. Just about every recipe we have in our archives uses onions, but this one highlights them in a special way. The man behind the stove today is Chef Bob Adkins.
Whoop whoop! It's one of my favorites, liver and onions. This is nice local lamb's liver from Fiedler Farms. Jim Fiedler, one of our great farmer friends. It's actually getting out of the lamb business, but he had a little bit left. But you can find, a lot of lamb farmers here in southern Indiana or wherever you may be. So you hear liver and onions and you think, oh, gosh, dried liver with that brown gravy. You don't even know what's in that. And just sitting on a plate with some gummy mashed potatoes. And
were you there at my childhood, Chef Bob?
I think I was at a lot of people's childhoods with that. And I remember it myself and it being a horrible experience. But we're going to do it right. We're going to do it with care, but we're going to do it very simply. So the liver comes to us. It's sliced in 1-pound packages, perfect for a family. And you're going to get 16 or 18 slices out of a 1-pound package. So it's not like it's a big hunk of liver. What we did, though, is that liver flavor is what really turns a lot of people off. We took our liver and we soaked it in milk overnight, along with the onions. That leaches out, one, from the onions, it leaches out some of the sulfur. And in the liver, it leaches out some of that really irony, organy, if you will, flavor that's associated with it. But you're left with a nice kind of mild liver, lamb flavor. So we've got that. I took it out of the milk. I've got a real simple dry dredge of cornstarch and some cornmeal. And I'm just going to sprinkle a couple tablespoons over. That's like equal part cornstarch to cornmeal. We'll sprinkle that over it. That's going to make it crisp. It's also going to soak up any of the liquid that might have remained on the liver and onions. So then when you put it in the pan, you don't burn off your eyebrows. I've got a pan on the heat, a nice 12-inch skillet on the heat. Bring that up real hot. But don't be afraid to cook over high heat at your house. It's one of the ways to achieve that sear, that flavor. So when your pan's hot and you put your oil in and the oil flows around really freely and it's got a nice little sheen to it, that's when you know it's hot. You don't really want it smoking. People talk about smoking, but by then it's breaking down, becomes indigestible. But a nice, really hot oil. Okay, so I've taken the onions and the liver that I've dredged, and it still could flare up, so I'm going to stand back a little bit, and I'm going to put them in a nice single layer. Also with a hot pan, if it's really hot, your food's not going to stick to it. So we're going to let that cook on one side about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Okay, you see how you hear that sizzling? Just going to give it a nice little flip. You don't want to cook liver all the way through. Nice local liver like a lot of local meats. They're handled better. They're treated better. So this lamb liver, beef liver, pork liver that you get locally, you can cook it to about a medium, just under a medium, where it's nice and pink in the middle. It's still moist, and you're still retaining a lot of flavor. It's not just a dried out, crumbly piece of liver. I keep going back to that, but if you do it correctly and you take the time to prepare it right, you're going to be so much more satisfied with the results. right before the lamb's at a medium, I'm going to take a big old tablespoon of minced garlic, about one big fresh jalapeno, throw it in the hot pan. You want to cook it a little bit because you want to infuse the essential oil, the capsaicin oil, with the liver and the onion so that it's all through it. Get that nice jalapeno flavor, but you don't want to overcook it so that it's turned to mush again. So just keep that moving on the heat. You can always take your tongs or a knife and kind of cut into the meat, take a look at it. She's just about ready. So really, honestly, that was about 3 minutes on the heat. Get it out of the pan to stop the cooking onto a nice little prepared platter. If you're doing it for two, this would be perfect. And so we put it on a platter. On this platter, we've got some avocado, some sour cream, again, some fresh pico de gallo. And instead of lettuce, I like to have cabbage, like a cabbage chiffonade, really finely sliced cabbage. Gives it a little crunch. It lasts longer. It's got a better shelf life. It's got better flavor. In the oven that I had heated at about 250 degrees, I've got some flour tortillas wrapped in foil so they're warming up as I was preparing the dish. So you pull those out of the oven, set it down, table, two people, a little bit of lamb liver, and onions with all the accoutrements. You've got yourself a really, really nice, simple meal.
Check out the recipe for these liver and onions tacos on our website. We also have recipes for vegan walnut tacos and tilapia fish tacos, serving all your taco needs at eartheats.org. Coming up, in preparation for Easter next week, we're devoting ourselves to eggs. An egg farmer is getting inspired creatively by her hens. One vendor at the winter market talks about why the mild weather has increased his chickens' egg yields. And we have a recipe using local eggs and some young veggies picked fresh from the garden. Stay with us.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, offering local, organic, and fair trade natural foods with cafe seating on East 3rd Street at the co-op's original location off Kirkwood and on West 6th Street, two blocks west of the Courthouse Square. Information at bloomingfoods.coop.
Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Compared to her 50 years as an artist, Gretchen Marks is relatively new to the egg business. As her chicken population has grown, she's found that they're inspiring her artistically. Gretchen Marks' property on the outskirts of Columbus, Indiana, is surrounded by tall, old trees. It includes a substantial fenced-in garden, pond, and a coop and pen for her 50-some chickens.
Well, when I buy chicken feed, I really look at the sack more than I do what's inside because I know that I can do something fun with it. And so I had been just piling them up and getting rid of them, and I thought one day, oh, that is not what I should be doing. And so I started really seriously gathering lots of different brands and making art. Anyway, I love finding found things and incorporating them, using them in a different way. So, you know, I'm a mixed media artist, and that's what I get my kicks from. You know, I love doing that.
She admits to selecting her chickens based on the beauty of their feathers and the color of the eggs they lay.
You know, these are from Araucanas. They're originated in Chile, and those are the ones that lay the blue and greenish eggs. Some of them are almost olive green.
I gotta say, they're beautiful.
Aren't they gorgeous?
They're just beautiful to look at. And especially when you compare them to the brown egg, they're like little pieces of art.
Little jewels.
Yeah, really.
They are. They're gorgeous. Now, this is a very high-tech here, the entry.
Hey, girls. You have guests. Come here. Come on. Come on.
You started this because you just couldn't get eggs with the flavor that you wanted. You were just sick of it. So tell me the difference in the taste.
Oh, it's unbelievable. The yolks are all deep orange, and they just sit up and look at you, you know? There's nothing like a fresh farm egg. The others taste watery. They're pale, and they have not much flavor. And I just think it's a wonderful thing to have your own eggs, to sell them, give them away. Hey, it's all right. It's okay. It's all right.
After feeding her chickens, Marks uses the big burlap feed sacks as the base for her collages. Her studio is on the second floor of her home, which is an amalgamation of three old barns.
Go in.
Thank you.
Sure.
This place is something out of the turn of the century. Dimly lit and drafty, with an imposing fireplace owning the center of the large common room, and old-fashioned tables and chairs carefully arranged into small groups.
It's okay, Willis. It's all right.
So now we're going up the stairs. Ooh, steep stairs.
Very steep and actually very narrow. Well, here's some of the sacks right here.
It's amazing to see all this vibrant color on your work. And I'm walking on brick floor, and I've got old-time furniture around me, yet I have this fantastic art that is so vibrant on the walls. I love the contrast.
Oh, thank you. I do, too.
She incorporates photos of her chickens in the feed sack collages, blue, green, brown, white eggshells, and the various colored and patterned chicken feathers.
So, then this is just kind of a little gallery space through here.
Oh, wow. The hallway turned gallery. How did you get into creating art?
Well, I can't remember when I didn't do something like drawing or playing with clay. Or actually, when we were kids, I have one sister, and when we were kids, on rainy days, we made scrapbooks. Now, I'm 73 years old, so that was way before scrapbooking.
Right, was in, yeah.
Right, and I think that's where a lot of my multimedia interest comes from, is making those scrapbooks, because it was so much fun.
Wow, Gretchen, so your work is beautiful.
Thank you.
And I want some eggs.
I have some ready for you.
All right. You can see images of Gretchen Marks' feed bag collages on our website, eartheats.org. The Summer Farmers Market in Bloomington, Indiana starts up the first Saturday of April, but we have one more conversation to share from the winter market season. Josh Milligan was manning the table for Shacked Farms. They raise free-range chickens for eggs and meat, free-range turkeys, pastured hogs, and grass-fed and finished cattle. They had a huge variety of meat for sale that day, but it was the eggs that caught the attention of most of the customers.
So we had a customer come and buy two dozen eggs. I came last week and you were out of eggs. So
right.
Is that your biggest seller?
Yeah, that definitely is what brings people in. We usually sell upwards of 50 dozen a week. It's been a big seller ever since that egg scare a couple years ago with the salmonella. People have really been looking to buy local eggs, and so our production's really taken off. And luckily, this winter's been so mild, our chickens have been producing a ton. And last year, we were feeding them a lot, and they weren't producing a lot, and so it was tough. This year, that hasn't been a problem. Since it's warmer, they're eating less and producing more, and so it's really paying off for us in a big way.
The coolest thing is that you have a picture here. Are these pigs that are on the farm?
Yes, those are. So we have Tamworth Black is the pigs we raise. They're super photogenic. They love, whenever they see people come by, they assume that you've got food for them. So they'll come up to the fence. And so my friend Tim Street actually took this picture a couple years ago. And it's just, it's always neat to be able to see where the animals come from and to know that they aren't in cages. They're out on the grass all their lives. You know, there's no hormones. There's no antibiotics. They're living as naturally as possible. It gives us a good feeling that we can show people what we're about, as well as giving them meat that's good to have.
So let's say I'm fixing a really fancy dinner for myself tonight.
Sure.
Pick something off of your menu here that I should definitely try.
Okay. I would say one of my favorite things to do is to get one of our boneless shoulder roasts. It's a pork roast. and you can put it in a crock pot frozen with some potatoes, onions, and carrots and make a really great pot roast in your crock pot. You put it in there, you don't think about the rest of the day. Everyone will be super impressed because it looks like you slaved away, but really you just put it in a crock pot and walked away and didn't think about it again.
Like, that's how I try to operate in the kitchen, actually. I love that.
That's the best way to go for sure.
Now to work with eggs in the kitchen. This salad includes young asparagus, potatoes, and greens from Chef Daniel Orr's garden, eggs from Gretchen Marks, of course, and the best part, a hunk of soft goat cheese from Capriol Farms.
Well, this just kind of shows that, you know, being a chef is more about ingredients than anything else, and we're going to just use those few ingredients that we pulled up today. We've got about 6 or 8 beautiful little new potatoes. Cut these into some little pieces. Got some of those nice lettuces out of the garden. Then we've got these fun, great big, little bit overgrown asparagus. And we're going to snap those. And then we've got this nice Wabash cannonball, which is goat cheese from Judy Shad down at Capriol Farms. We're using a little bit of olive oil in a nonstick pan. And we're going to cook some of these great eggs from Gretchen's. Just cover them with a plate. And what that's going to do is allow them to cook very gently and kind of be sheared eggs. At the same time, I've got my potatoes cooking over here, some salted water.
In with the asparagus.
In with the asparagus, right in that same water with the potatoes. Turn off our eggs. And I'm leaving both the potatoes and the asparagus a little bit crunchy. When they're this fresh, I think that that's the best way to enjoy them. Put those right on top of the lettuce, kind of wilting it. I cut up some of Judy's cheese to put around. Okay, and we're just going to drizzle a little good extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of your favorite vinegar. Okay, and that, and some nice crusty bread.
That's gorgeous. Let's eat.
Yeah, let's go bring it outside. Okay, I'll get some. Now, when you're eating this, I've left these kind of sunny-side-up eggs, so you break the yolk, and that's kind of your dipping sauce.
Find this recipe and many more on our website, like vegan Chinese dumplings and crispy orange glazed duck, a couple recipes from our bloggers. That's all at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Chef Bob Adkins, Gretchen Marks, Josh Milligan, Mia Partlow, Vicky Pierce, Chef Daniel Orr, and all the folks at Harvest Public Media. Our news bloggers are Liz Leslie and Sarah Gordon. Eabon Binder and Ben Alford run the website. Carrie Boyce is the executive producer.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, offering local, organic, and fair trade natural foods, with cafe seating on East 3rd Street, at the co-op's original location off Kirkwood, and on West 6th Street, 2 blocks west of the Courthouse Square. Information at bloomingfoods.coop. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Carrie Boyce, executive producer.
Come back next week for rabbit stew in honor of Easter and recipes in the Jewish tradition, potato latkes and carrot and apple and sweet potato tzimmas. As always, we also talk to some farmers and review the latest in food news headlines. This is Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Thanks for listening.